Hello, everybody. Each day at this time, there's going to be something called a Dharma talk, which is some words on some particular maybe aspect of the path that hopefully is relevant to what we're doing here on this retreat, and hopefully kind of illuminating the way forward a little bit. So not so much like purely theoretical, you know, more having to do with actually what we're doing, why we're doing it, etc. Yeah. And just a word or two before we start about listening to a Dharma talk. The idea is to be present and receptive, kind of just letting the words, concepts, language just kind of flow through you. And particularly if there's something that doesn't click or you don't understand it, let it go. Don't sit there and try to figure it out, because while you're doing that, then the other words that are coming aren't going to be kind of fully, you won't fully be with them. Yeah? My experience is that, you know, whenever one listens to Dhamma teachings, some of it, quote, sticks, i.e. we resonate with it. It's like, yep, there's got it. And sometimes not so much. It, we just maybe don't understand it, or it doesn't jibe with our experience. If that's the case, really just let that go. Don't feel like, oh, I have to somehow make myself, you know, contort so that I'm congruent with this. Just let what's happening come. Often, if there are parts of the teaching that maybe we don't really get or understand or appreciate even or even like. I remember sometimes like, oh, just no, no. And over time, you know, that no can become a maybe. Oh, maybe, huh? And then over time, that maybe can even become a yes. And the yes can become an absolute. So, circling back again to trust the process. And if it is a no right now, then it doesn't need to be anything different. It's just, it can just be that. Yeah? tonight, going to talk a little bit about connecting what we're doing here on this retreat, which is, you know, mainly the formal practice, with the larger Noble Eightfold Path. So the Noble Eightfold Path is kind of encompasses all of the Buddha's teachings, and the practice of the Eightfold Path, the development of it, which is what the Buddha said we are to do with it. What we're to do with the Eightfold Path is develop it. And that development of it, it encompasses our whole life. There's no aspect of our life that doesn't come under the umbrella of the Noble Eightfold Path. You know, what we're doing here with the formal practice is one part of the Eightfold Path. In fact, it's 3/8 of it. And then, like the refuges and precepts we took, our speech, our actions, how we be in the world, how we be with each other, that's another 3/8 of it. So that's 6 of the 8. And then the last two path factors are wisdom path factors, called wise view and wise intention. So this, what we're doing here is 3/8 of it. Important, absolutely, this cultivating mindfulness and present moment awareness. Just to say, though, it's not all of it. The path is much wider. Sometimes we can be meditating and doing the formal practice, and I'm sure you've had this thought before. I think every meditator has, what does being with this sensation, you know, in my back right now or whatever, have to do with liberation from suffering? Like, what's the deal here? Right? Like, we can kind of lose the thread. And so this talk, hopefully, is to knit that back together and connect that. Like, what we're doing here in this hall, what we're doing when we're walking back and forth, how does that relate to the goal of this practice, which is liberating the heart and mind from that which causes it, which binds it to suffering? Right? How do those two relate? So talk about three ways, in a very general way, what we're doing here and what we're cultivating in this hall and walking back and forth is we're cultivating mindfulness and concentration. And its purpose, right? So it's not just the purpose isn't just to have it and tell your friends, hey, look, I can be mindful, watch, right? Or, you know, the analogy that gets used, which is a really good one, is we're not sharpening a knife just to kind of show it off. Hey, feel that. Oh, it's sharp. Yeah. We're sharpening a knife so that we can do something with it and do it well. Right? And do it, slice the onion, say, and do it really well so it doesn't slide off the onion and, you know, nick our finger or something. In the same way, we're cultivating mindfulness and concentration so that, and the first so that is, and in the most general way, is to be present with more and more of our lives. Simple as that. Jean was talking about with one of the questions, one of the back and forths this afternoon, about how when our experience isn't kind of really flashy, either in an unpleasant way or a pleasant way, when it's not really kind of like getting our attention, we just don't notice it. When it's called what we would call neutral, the habit pattern is to just not notice it. It just goes by. And so, in its most general way, the reason we're cultivating what we are here is so that we can connect with more and more of our lives. And then furthermore, we're not just connecting with more and more of our lives to connect with more and more of our lives. I mean, that in itself is, you know, that would actually be quite a worthy undertaking, yeah? To navigate through this life and live a life and have much of it kind of not quite really be connected with is a bit sad. It's a bit of a shame. So the more we can connect with our lives, the more we fully live our lives, the more we kind of express our fuller humanity. So just that in itself is great. But we're connecting with more and more of our lives for a particular reason, which I'll get to in the next part. But I want to first describe a little analogy in terms of expanding what we're aware of and contrast it to a different approach, sometimes an often held approach to spiritual practice and spiritual life that goes unnoticed but is actually not helpful. And the not helpful approach goes something like this. And it's in the shape of a pyramid, right? So you have this big, wide base, and then it gets narrow and narrower as you go up, right? And so in this approach, we start our lives with all of this material, basically our whole life, right? All our joys, our sorrows, our wholesome behaviors, our unwholesome behaviors, just all of it, the whole mess of it, right? And then in this kind of view or model, we keep getting rid of the bad stuff, like get rid of it. And we keep only the good stuff, and we keep ascending, right? We keep getting more and more rarefied until at some point we reach this pinnacle, this peak, when only the most amazing, like perfect moment is left, right? And ta, we've got something. Yeah? That's that model, and not a great model. Don't recommend it. But it can be a model that, again, that can kind of be lurking in there without our really being fully aware of it, right? I'm going to get better. I mean, who didn't start this practice so that you'd get better, right? I mean, at some point, that's a little bit of a maturation in Dharma practice when you realize that you started this practice actually to get better because you weren't good the way you were. And everyone does that. Everyone starts to practice that way. And at some point, we realize that that's not really the right game to be playing, or helpful one for that matter. So that's that approach. The other approach, which we much more recommend, is an approach of widening circles. So again, we start out with the whole mess, yeah? But there are two categories we have of experience. One is experience that is that we accept, that we tolerate, that we think is okay, right? And that's everything inside this circle. And then there's everything else that isn't acceptable. Parts of us that aren't acceptable, behavior, things in the world, certainly other people, that's just like, no, right? And that's outside of the circle. So we have yes inside of the circle and no in the outside of the circle. And in this approach, it's not an ascending that we're doing, it's a widening and an opening. And slowly, over time, that circle starts to widen because there's more and more inside of it that there's a yes to, and less outside of it that there's a no to. More and more and more and more and more and more. And then at some point, no boundary. There's no circle. It's just all yes. Now, little kind of side note or caveat, just because we're saying yes to something doesn't mean we see it as worthy of cultivating. It just means we accept it for being here. Here it is. It's here. No. Yeah, but it's here. No. We stop railing against what is. And as we stop railing, we can actually see it better, right? If you're kind of like struggling with something and fighting with it, you can't really get a sense of it. We just stop. Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Oh, that's not helpful. Actually, when I do that, that doesn't feel good. And so the yes doesn't mean that we will feed it. And it might mean that, yeah, I need to actually starve this thing. But we're accepting it in the moment because it's here so that we can practice with it and work with it. Does that make sense? So the circle of the yes gets bigger and bigger. And this is from this spiritual path viewpoint, when we say connecting with more and more of our life, this is what we're talking about. Maybe that's enough for that one. So that's kind of the first answer to why are we doing this here? What's the connection between walking back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. What's the connection between that and freedom of heart and mind? So very generally, connecting with more and more of our lives. More specifically, the purpose of what we're doing here is to become more and more finely aware or clearly aware of what actually leads to our happiness and what actually leads to our unhappiness. The Buddha talked about, he said, and he called people who don't practice uninstructed worldlings. So, you know, not too bad. Meaning uninstructed in ways of Dhamma, in ways of practicing and being in the world that lead to happiness. It's not a moral judgment. It's just like they're not instructed, right? If you're not instructed in algebra, like, you can't do it. You don't know how to do it. So it's just that uninstructed. And then the worldling part is trying to find happiness through the things of the world, thinking that that's where they're to be found, where happiness is to be found. Yeah, so that's the uninstructed worldling. So he said, to an uninstructed worldling, what I say leads to happiness, they think it leads to suffering. And what I say leads to suffering, they think leads to happiness. Like it's exactly the opposite. When we don't see clearly, we're seeing wrongly. It's called delusion or ignorance on the path. We're not seeing clearly. We think this thing, this approach, this way of living, this approach to happiness works. We think it actually works. And the Buddha's saying, it actually doesn't. And we think that this relationship to what's difficult in life actually can keep us protected from it, get refuge from it, circling back to refuge. We think that our approach to that works. And the Buddha is saying, actually, it doesn't work. So it's like we've got it backwards. And then the third reason why we do this, practice, is to become aware of the habit patterns in our heart and mind. So in the Pali language, the language that the teachings were written down in, the word for this is citta, C-I-T-T-A. And in this language, in the language of Dhamma, there's not a differentiation between heart and mind. So it's just one thing, citta. We want to become aware, more and more clearly aware of the habit patterns that are ingrained in this, on our heart minds, because they run our lives, particularly when we're not aware of them. When we're not aware of them, these patterns actually are pulling all the levers and switches. They're in the driver's seat. For better or for worse, they are guiding our lives. And so we want to be aware, what are they, and are they for our benefit? Is this a pattern that I want to feed? Someone was talking today and the question, wow, is this a thought that's good to reflect on, that's good to feed? Certain things are, absolutely. Certain patterns in this heart and mind, we might have a pattern of being generous. Yeah, feed that. All the way, keep going with that. And we have patterns of heart and mind that aren't helpful for us, that aren't for our well-being, that lead to our unhappiness. And we want to not feed those. We want to actually starve those. But we have to see them clearly first before we can even do any of that. We have to become aware of them. We can't be so wrapped up in them that we don't see them. And we need to, oh, okay. We need to be able to look at them So that's the third reason we're doing what we do here. So let's go into them, each of them, a little bit more closely. We talked a bit about the first one in terms of the pyramid versus the expanding circles. We want to connect with our lives, with this world, more and more fully. Because as we do that, we'll be able to do these the second and the third one much more. We're going to have more material to work with. We're going to have more data, right, in terms of like that approach. We're going to have more data to work with. If we're not connecting with our lives fully, if we're kind of just sleepwalking through life, we don't have a lot of data to work with in terms of, gee, what actually brings me happiness, or what actually brings me suffering, or what are the habit patterns of this heart and mind? We have to connect to be able to do that. So that's why this is the kind of the fundamental one, the most general one. Connect with ourselves and with our lives. What actually brings, the second one, what actually brings happiness and what actually brings suffering? I'm going to just give a few examples that might illuminate what the Buddha's pointing to here. It can be fun, or the idea can be fun, to go to a movie, right? Oh, let's go to a movie. Oh, boy. You know, like, ah. And sometimes it can be fulfilling. Sometimes it can just be entertaining. Sometimes it can be fulfilling, given, depending on what the content is. Sometimes it can be just a waste of time. Have you ever had that experience? You're walking out of the movie, and it's so visceral, yeah? It's like, I just wasted 2 hours of my life. Yeah? It's like, what a waste. But that wasn't what we thought when we decided to go see the movie. Oh, I think I'm going to go waste 2 hours of my life. No, there was that flash. There was that sparkle of, oh. Oh, boy. Oh. Right? That'll be good. Let's do that. Or I'll do that. This promise of happiness. Yeah? We don't, you know, human beings, we're a little slow on the draw, but we're not stupid. And we don't, if we see clearly, we don't do things that bring us unhappiness. So that, like, that moment of, oh, let's go to this movie. There's a movement towards happiness, wanting to be happy. But it's actually the opposite in this case that I'm talking about. It actually was, ugh. It's a horrible feeling to feel like you just wasted 2 hours of your life. It is not happy making. So this is like one example where the Buddha's like, no, that actually was the opposite. It actually didn't bring you your happiness. It actually brought you unhappiness. Different arenas in life here, I'll use an example that we can hopefully relate to one of them. Food. You know, food that we enjoy, food that we like, again, that the thought of it is like, ah, move towards that. That will bring happiness. That'll be good, right? And then have you ever, whether you're eating at home or going out to eat or over friends or family's house, and you have a big meal, and it's like, whoa, right? Oh, it doesn't feel so great. Full, over full. unpleasant, not happy. So what was, again, that'll be good, can turn out the opposite. Or you go out to eat, and then later in the month, you get the bill, credit card bill. Like, oh, yeah? Why did I do that? Oh. Or if you ever done this, you've gone out to eat, and it's kind of like with the movie, you're done, it's like, that wasn't so great, right? It wasn't certainly compared to that moment, because it takes just a moment, and then we're hooked. It's compared to that moment of, it doesn't match that. I'm trying to give an array of examples. Another is watching sports. Oh boy, you know, I'm going to watch the so-and-so game, the whatever. And then you pay attention, really, to what's going on in you, not in the game. Your heart's racing, it's agitating. Oh, it's like, it's not peaceful. It's not happy-making. It's agitating. It's suffering. To the degree that you're attached, right? To the degree that you're attached, but certainly has the capacity to be. I mean, have you ever seen, like, sometimes they'll take, there'll be like a still shot of a fan at a game? Monsters. Monsters. That's what's happening in the heart and the mind. Yeah, let's go to the Celtics game or watch it. What we think is going to bring happiness can often bring the opposite. Last one. Maybe we can, to some degree, everyone can relate to this. Falling in love. Right? Yes. Yeah, right? Oh. So in the, everything out there in the media and the movies are like, they pump that up. And there, and there, you know, there can be moments. I'm not cynical, by the way. I'm just trying to be pragmatic. But if you've ever then paid attention, if you've ever brought mindfulness to that place, that head over heels place, it is not pleasant. I remember the first time I realized that, I was like, oh my God, I am suffering here. I am so agitated. But again, like, falling in love. And then the reality can be the opposite. So just examples, and there's millions of them, but some examples of what we think is going to bring us happiness, and that allure turns out to be the opposite. And then, on the other end of the spectrum, what we think is going to is like, no, I don't want that. And one we can really practice with, and you will practice with, I mean, whether you want to or not, is pain in the body while sitting. Right? Pain in the body. No. And of course, pain can mean that something's happening in the body that's not helpful and we need to attend to that. I'm not talking of that kind of pain. I'm talking about the aches and pains that come from sitting still. And that is not, it's like, no. That's outside the circle for sure. That is not going to lead me to happiness. Let me get away from it. Well, and again, this is not about not taking care when we're doing the formal practice, standing up when you need to, shifting your position when you need to. And it is absolutely possible to have unpleasant body sensations and even strong, even intensely strong unpleasant body sensations, and the heart and mind be just fine, totally at ease, not agitated, no problem. And that can be experienced. It's not, you don't need 30 years of practice to that, just patience, presence. And to experience that, to experience what anything that we normally would just say no to, whatever it is, I use this example of aches and pains, but anything that we normally would just wholesale, reactively say no to, and we experience that thing with a heart and mind that is just fine, that experience is very happy-making. It's so freeing. And we see where the problem is and where it's not. We see, oh, the problem's not out there. It's actually how I'm relating to things, which is going to determine in the moment whether I'm struggling or whether I'm at ease. It's not in the thing itself. And to see that is hugely happy-making. It's so empowering, so freeing. So what we thought, like, no, that is not happy-making, actually can be. And again, this holds true for any challenging things in life. I just use the example just because we're here and we all will experience lots of it. Or some people actually don't, but most people experience quite a bit of aches and pains on an intensive retreat like this. But you could plug in anything, any challenging, difficult experience for that. Which doesn't mean we go seeking them, like, oh, let me hook up with this really terrible experience so that I can be happy, right? It doesn't mean that. It means we live in a world with pleasure and pain, and gain and loss, and joy and sorrow, right? It's called in the teachings the worldly winds. We live in a world where the worldly winds blow beyond our control, and we're subject to experiencing them. And so, when the winds are blowing with pain or challenges, can we be happy? That's the $10,000 question. I mean, we have to... inflation, the $100,000 question. Because it's going to happen. And we can't do anything about it. It's just the world we live in. Okay, the third one. Doing the formal practice, sharpening the knife, for the last reason is to see closely these habit patterns in our hearts and minds. From a Dharma path perspective, we're not so concerned of where they came from. Oh, when I was 4, this happened, and there. I'm not saying that that's. It may not be helpful to understand that, because it can be. Again, strictly from a Dhamma perspective, we're not so interested in the whys or the. It's more the how, meaning, how do these things manifest? What are the conditions that support them arising? Like, these are seeds we have in us. What are the conditions that are supportive for this particular seed to sprout? And when it sprouts, what can I do to either cultivate it because it's a wholesome habit pattern, I really want to feed it? What are the conditions I need to do to, using this analogy, to help this plant grow? And if it's unwholesome, what are the conditions that are supportive to letting it go, to starving it, so that it's a little bit less likely to arise the next time? There's a teaching that, kind of like a structure that can be supportive in understanding how to do this or what we're doing with this part of the practice. It's an acronym called RAIN, R-A-I-N, stands for recognize. The A can be, it's a gradation from like acknowledge, allow, accept. Like it can be, maybe all we can do is acknowledge something. We can't allow it, we can't accept it, but we can acknowledge it. Yes, so there can be a range of A's. The I is interest or intimacy, becoming intimate with something. And the N is non-identification. So the first and most important one is R, the recognize. Right? This is why we're sharpening this knife, so that we're present, so we're present with more and more of our lives, including these programs that run that until we start to look, we're not even aware of. And they're running our lives. If anyone ever saw the first Matrix movie, it's like, that's us. That's us when there's no understanding. We're just this thing's playing, and we just think it's real. We think these programs that run in our heart and mind are actually us and are actually real, like they're based in reality, when in fact they're not. They're just programs that run. So to be able to recognize them, there's my not good enough program, right? There's the I have to work my extra hard program. There's the whatever, right? We all have them. Everyone has them. You're not alone. So to be able to at least recognize something, remember, we're so close to it, we're so in it, we don't even know it's there. There's distance now. There's some nascent form of disidentification. That which is seeing the program is not the program. Then the A, the allow, and then now that's a bit more challenging, because especially with these more difficult programs, when we start to see them and start to really experience them, not just live them out, but really feel them, some of these more difficult programs are yuck. Just like, And who wants to allow that? Who wants to even acknowledge that? Who wants to accept that, right? It can take some doing to turn the no into a yes. But over time, that's what we work with. But even if we can just do it a little, like, okay, it's here. I'll allow it just for a moment. Then there can be interest. Then there can be more intimacy with it. And here is where the all-important shift goes from out of the head into the body. When these programs are running, there is a... they run in the heart and mind, but they're also running parallel in the body. The body is responding. And so we come into the body and start to connect and become intimate. Even we can move closer to them through being with them in the body. Because if the story parts, it's near impossible to not just get sucked into it and lost in it and believe it and just. But we can maybe be with tight stomach. I can do. or fluttery chest, or tight shoulders, or whatever. And we just be with that. We hold it gently, kindly, maybe feel other parts of the body that aren't so triggered. Let the whole thing kind of soften. And over time, and time could just be a couple minutes, just not be as tight and open up just a little bit. We want to be with these programs, these habit patterns in our heart and mind. We want to work with them in the body. And so if you're ever wondering, why they keep saying, pay attention to your body, feel your body, get intimate with your body. Why? This is a big reason why. Because the body becomes the vehicle then with clear, close attention to it that we cultivate. It becomes then the vehicle for working with these habit patterns, with these programs. And it becomes a vehicle in which they can be let go in. And we want to work in the body and not try to figure out these programs. If we try to figure them out, chances are another program is going to kick in. Oh, really? So let's say we have the not good enough program, right? And we become aware of that. It's like, I got to do something about this. All right, this is the no. This is no acceptance. No. At least at least the R is happening, the recognizing, but there's no A, just no. Right? I got to do something about it. And then the one who tries hard program kicks in. Right? Double down. Now you got two programs running. Yeah? So when we try to figure it out and do it kind of psychologically, and often it doesn't work, come into the body is where these things can be let go of. And it takes patience and perseverance. You're not going to just see it once and have it happen, you know. And this is where, patience and perseverance. This is where you might hear the word virya or energy. It's what's called an enlightenment factor. We need to bring that to this path. Not so much in any one moment, but in the over and over and over again. You work with one of these patterns in the body, 2 minutes later, it's running again. Okay? Do it again. Yep. Recognize it. Accept it. Feel it in the body. Okay, let's soften around it. Let's let this unwind. Oh, okay. 2 minutes later. So the energy isn't what we have to do in any given moment. It's over time. It's how we keep doing it. I guess I'm going to end with a nice, I don't know if it's a poem, I don't know what you call something, like it doesn't rhyme, but it's a piece of writing. And it really speaks beautifully to the process that we all go through. And we're at different places with different programs. Yeah, so it's not all just across the board. And the name of this piece of writing is called Hole in the Sidewalk. Some of you may have heard it. It's quite apt. So here it is. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Okay, chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to find a way out. Okay, chapter 3. I walk down the same street, right? There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. The fault part of this poem isn't so great, but it's like, it is my responsibility, you could say. I get out immediately. chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down a different street. So, right? We can relate this easily to, and we go through this process, and there's not much skipping over it, especially these deeply entrenched habit patterns. It takes time, but this does happen if we keep practicing with them. And then there's an additional bonus chapter, and is then you go stand next to the hole and let other people know that it's there. And they're still going to have to go through what they have to go through, right? But that can still be what our practice is, to let them know it's there. Okay. Let's just sit quietly for a minute or two before we go to dinner. Coming back into the body. What did he say about what? No, just let that go. Come back into the immediacy of the moment. Because that's what we're cultivating. This is the knife we're sharpening. And it doesn't take effort. Coming into the present moment, we don't effort our way in. We relax our way into it. Ride your next out-breath into the present moment. Ride your next out-breath into your body. Very little effort needed, only doing it again and again. Okay, time for eating meditation. And then we'll meet back at 6:30 for a little bit different kind of practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.